Welcome to the sixth panel of... I'm going to sit down right now. Welcome to the sixth DJ panel for the featuring the lights and sounds of exhibition here at G727. This is the Power Tools panel. Thank you all for coming out. As I said, this is the sixth one. We've had a great series running. These are all meant to capture the voices of people who have been a part of the DJ culture for the past 30 years. We videotape, we MP3 record, and as you've seen our sculpture back there created by my co-curator Adrian Rivas, we're collecting flyers, we're also collecting lights and stories. So bear with us as we run through the technical things that we go through. This is the largest one that we've had. Thank you all for coming out once again. I'm going to turn it over to our moderator, Romulo Rivera. This is he's one of the founding members of this exhibition, along with myself and Adrian. He came aboard at the early stage. Romulo's work has been focused mostly on archiving the flyers in a digital format. That part of the exhibition will develop in later time, but we still are collecting flyers, and we could use a lot of help in that very tedious and hard work that we have to do in archiving digitally our flyers. We're going to have a website that is going to have flyers cross-referenced by DJs, locations, promoters. We're going to have it connected through Google. We're going to have it connected via satellite. You're going to be able to see time-lapse on how something started and spread out through the area. It's going to be very cool once we're done with it, but it's a lot of work, and Romulo Rivera is in charge of it. We met Romulo as in the Power Tools verse. Is that a word? I just made it up. He was our first website designer, so much love to Romulo for getting us onto the website, into the internet first and foremost. Romulo has also gone on to help put a lot of people in our Congress online. First, he started with Power Tools, and then he went over to Washington and helped people like Loretta Sanchez and various Congress people get online by helping them design the websites and helping them realize the potential of the internet. And as we all know, how huge it is now. This is pre-MySpace, pre-Facebook. You know, Romulo was one of those guys who saw forward like that, and it's a great honor to work with him and to turn it over to him. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, Jerry, for that introduction. Welcome, everybody, to this very special panel of Power Tools Mix Show, broadcasting Los Angeles DJ culture for 16 years. Today, we're very fortunate to have seven distinguished DJs here who make up the Power Tools cast. I'm just going to go ahead and introduce in alphabetical order, we have Robert Cazares. He's called one of Southern California's best-kept secrets as a producer and DJ. Robert has been heating up a lot of dance floors throughout his vibrant sound. Back in 2003, Robert started as an intern on Power Tools and has since gone on to work with a number of big names and dance music scene makers. Today, Robert consistently continues to be a DJ throughout L.A. And continues to release remixes and original work. Robert is also the cousin to the legendary Swedish Eagle. Welcome, Robert. Also joining us via the wonder of the World Wide Web, and iBook, we have Raul Campos, a.k.a. RC1, a native of Los Angeles who embodies the spirit of the city. He hosts a weekly, nightly show called Nocturna, as well as Power Tools on Saturday nights. He's back.
Turn your mic off, Jerry. Bringing it to him.
I don't want him to sound like Mickey Mouse the whole time.
Thank you. Raul is also in great demand as a club DJ and has billed with some of the LA's biggest parties. He's DJed and opened for DJs like Paul Oakenfold, Ron Trent, Static Avenger, Armand Van Helden, and Mark Farina. He's joining us today via from Denver, is that right?
Denver.
So welcome, Raul. Also joining us today is the legendary Swedish Eagle. Swedish Eagle is...
Hello.
is known as the godfather of modern dance music in Los Angeles. He arrived from Sweden in 1976, and by the early 80s was the DJ on an influential DJ on the world-famous K-Rock, before helping to start up the nation's first commercial techno station, the short-lived Mars FM, in 1991. He also has his own record, or had his own record label, Eagle Music. During the 90s, he also resurrected the essence of Mars on Groove Radio. Swedish Eagle also founded one of the internet's most beloved online stations, GrooveRadio.com, and still mans the airwaves on Power Tools and Sirius Satellite Radio. Today, Eagle continues to run GrooveRadio.com out of his Whittier home and enjoys a very healthy membership of listeners, 112,000, listening to GrooveRadio.com. Welcome, Eagle.
Thank you.
Also joining us, Gerard Moraz, the super dope, super duper dope producer. Gerard is the author of the recently published thesis, An Oral History of DJ Culture from East Los Angeles. His master thesis documents the history of East Los Angeles DJ culture by interviewing several prominent DJs that were active between 1980 and 2004. This book was published in conjunction with the Featuring the Lights and Sounds of exhibit here that we're witnessing at the G727 Gallery. Gerard has been a longtime contributor to the East Los Angeles dance music scene and is a founding member of the Power Tools Mix Show. Welcome, Gerard. He'll be signing books afterwards. And right next to him, we have Richard Vision, Grammy-nominated remixer and producer. Richard Vision rocks dance floors around the world with his recent remixes of Prince, Timbaland, Gnarls Barkley, and David Bowie, as well as his original productions like Somebody and Automatic. His label, Soulmatic, has grown from releasing some of the top underground bangers of the year to being a full-blown dance club resident phenom. Vision consistently ranks in the top 30 DJs for the last decade and showing no sign of slowing down in 2008. Whether it's producing a remix for the latest pop star or hosting the longest-running mix show in the U.S., Power Tools, Vision's work is met with enthusiasm from top of the charts, and he is truly the soul of the underground. Thanks for joining us, Richard. In the middle, we have David Delano, David is a DJ, remixer, producer who's been working with Power Tools for the last 2 years. He has over 20 years of DJ experience and spins all over the United States, making his mark as a progressive and captivating sound. And thanks for joining us today, David. And right next to me is, some folks know him as DJ Fusion, the Power Tools champion. And we also know him as Sully Belarto. He's a new breed of underground DJ, making his mark as a Power Tools DJ champion. He's been working with Power Tools for the last 5 years, and he's one of the most prominent tech house DJs in Los Angeles with residencies in various undergrounds. Thank you for joining us. All right, well, let's get to the heart of this discussion here. Obviously, 16 years is a long time, and we all are kind of anxious to know, how did this concept of Power Tools first emerge, and how did you end up getting involved? So we'll start with the two kind of oldest contributors here. So Richard or Jerry?
You start. How you got it?
Is this loud enough? Shit. The show basically got started. I started interning at Power 106. And I didn't let them know I was a DJ. Woo. And they finally gave me an opportunity to start mixing on the air, like on Saturday nights. But I was playing music that I wasn't really into. I mean, it was cool club music, but it wasn't like the underground stuff that I wanted to showcase. So I just finally went up to the program director and said, hey, I think you guys should do a show that's all techno and house, and do it on Saturday nights. And they were like, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. Why don't you do it? And I said, okay, cool. Who's going to host it? And they're like, you. And I had never talked on the radio in my life. And I was like, well, I don't think that's a good idea. And they said, well, do you want somebody like on the air talking about music that they didn't know anything about? And I said, well, you got a point. So I did it the first week all by myself, and I thought, honestly, it sounded terrible. I remember we were listening to it, me and my boys. We were like, I think I was playing at the Palace back at the time, and we were out there, and I was like, this is embarrassing. I sound horrible. I went to the program director the following Monday thinking, like, for sure they're going to hire somebody else. He's like, no, that sounds good, man. You'll get the hang of it. He goes, let's do this every week. And I was like, holy shit, we're going to do this every week. So then I called Jerry. I'm like, yo, they just gave me a show. I need help. So Jerry came aboard on the second show. And that's how we just kind of developed things. I think at first I was mixing the whole show for about the first, like, 3 or 4 months. And then we decided to bring in some guest DJs. Because I think after 3 or 4 months, it got real popular, and they wanted to expand it to like 4 hours right away or 3 hours right away. And so we thought it would be good to bring in some guest DJs, and I'll let Jerry take it from there.
I think Richard was mixing as himself and then as Richie Rich. You had some other funny name. And then I don't think he went that long. He also had Taylor turning in stuff. And I think Moon Pup was submitting stuff already. There were people that Richard had met from playing in the Palace and in various places. I was a callejero at the time, hitting all the clubs with Lana, my homegirl. And so I got to know a lot of the DJs, and so that allowed me to invite more DJs to come into the show to contribute.
Now, each of you here today represent a different period of the show's trajectory. Tell us how each of you became involved with Power Tools, and how long have you been working with the show?
I think 1992, first time I appeared on Power Tools. You said you had a tape from that time. I was a DJ at Mars and had Richard Vision come in as a guest because he had a big hit with a song called Jump. And then Richard paid me back and asked me to be a guest on Power Tools, and I was on there and been a guest on and off ever since.
I've been on Power Tools for the last, 2 years? I started off as just a regular club DJ. Richard came and scouted me. Just kind of wanted another mixer on Power Tools. And Jerry approached me one day and goes, hey, we're going to have a meeting about something. I didn't know what it was. Richard came up to me. We had a meeting and stuff like that. Told me, you know, you've done pretty good out in the club scene. I want you to come on to Power Tools. And now I'm on Power Tools.
Started off as an intern, finished broadcasting school. I wanted to be a DJ. Actually, I wanted to be a power mixer. And my cousin called Jerry, hey, get my cousin a job, Jerry. So I started interning, and Jerry's like, where do you live? I was like, Orange County. He's like, nah, that's too far. You're not going to want to come in every week. And I said, just give me a chance. He gave me a chance. And then I later found out Eagle was related to one of my cousins, or married one of my cousins. And then one day we were recording a show, and they needed a mix. And Jerry said, can you do a mix? I said, yeah. And they liked it ever since then.
I actually started off as a listener. So I started listening to the show, I think, toward the end of 92, 93. And I don't think that the show started hosting DJ contests till I think it was, the first one was in 96 or 97, but at that point I didn't have any equipment. But the year that I did have equipment, I submitted a mix, and that was 6 years ago, I believe. And I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to win the Power Tools DJ competition, and one of the perks of winning was to be a resident once a month, and I've been a resident since, and it's been an amazing experience, actually.
Are we going to be able to get Raul? While we're waiting for Raul, I'll just kind of give a fan's perspective. We got him? Okay.
There I am. All right, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, well, how did I get a Power Tools? That's the question. Tony Teaser. was going to the dome. He was the villain guy back in the day when they were doing at Fortune Garden. And I would go with Tony. And then Tony introduced me to AJ and Mark. And then little by little, I started hanging out with the DJ group while Richard and Tony were DJing. And then started going down to the show every now and then when Tony was in the mix. And after a while, I just gave them a mix. And I think Richard's response was, like, why did it take you so long to give us a mix? And this was back, like, in 95, 96, something like that. And, yeah, that's really how it all started. We started doing mega mixes for, like, the best stuff for the year end. And little by little, just got back into it and started hanging out more and more with people like Jerry and doing mixes for the DJ contest. And then here we are.
Great. Thank you, Raul. I hope you guys all heard that.
No more answers from you, Raul.
Well, myself as a fan, I'm just going to take you back to the spring of 1992. It was actually March 30th, and I turned 16. My parents had bought me a brand new boombox for my birthday. And excitingly, I unpacked it and turned it on. I tuned it into my favorite radio station, 105.9 at the time. And the first thing that came on was a commercial for the new show that would be debuting that Saturday night. The commercial was playing like this really fast dance music and ended up with this like drilling sound, and it was called Power Tools. And so I was intrigued. So that Saturday, you know, at the time, Mars FM was really taking over the LA airwaves, playing a new breed of dance music around the clock. This sound was like nothing anybody had ever heard or played. And I was very surprised that Power was actually going to do something of that nature with Power Tools. So that Saturday, Sunday morning, I tuned in with my new boombox, and I was hooked from then on. This developed into a weekly ritual, which I sat down weekend after weekend with my tape recorder, willing, you know, ready to listen to the mixes. So ever since then, been a fan, and you know, it's a really honor to be here with you guys.
I don't know if you guys understood him, but Raul came in through a friend named Tony Teaser, who hung out with AJ Mora. Where is he at? AJ Mora. He hung out with Tony Teaser, and this is around the time of the Dome. And Raul started coming out and hanging out, and him and Tony would put together mega mixes for us, especially the for New Year's or for our countdowns. They would submit some incredibly produced mega mixes that you know, saved Richard a lot of time because he was touring the world doing Jump Motherfucker. And so, you know, he came through with a lot of good mixes and just kept submitting them, and basically that's what happened.
Thanks for the translation there. All right. Well, you know, I'm curious. You know, it's been 16 years. You know, at first it seems like it was an experimental thing. The name Power Tools, it's you know, it has nothing to do with dance music in essence. How did it come about? Why has it stuck around? Give us your take.
The name of the show, the station wanted to have the name Power incorporated in it. And this even goes back before Power Tools. There was like an industrial club called Power Tools in Hollywood that had happened like 5 or 6 years before the whole house thing. And it was basically taken from that name of the club because we're trying to figure out what sounded cool with power. And it just came up like that. How about Power Tools? All right, cool. It wasn't like we didn't think of it or let's ask somebody. And it's just something that just kind of just took.
Well, great. Well, you know, over the years, obviously the music hasn't been the station's favorite thing. And so I have an excerpt of a time in 1993 when you guys went off the air. I want you to take a listen to it, and I want you to comment on it.
Special guest, Yama, the Swedish.
That's amazing. Yeah. And once again, we got, you know, the reason being that the show is off the air is because management here feels that people aren't really into this type of music. We feel, I mean, house like right now is just growing and growing and growing, but it's not like mass appealing. And we can kind of understand the station's point of view. They want, you know, they're going for mass appeal.
Yeah, and under house music and this kind of music is definitely more on the underground vibe. And,
but
you know,
it's growing. It's growing. Right. Everybody definitely out there who's listening right now, you know this type of the music is, you know, the music of the future. And like we said before, you guys have to support what's going on so it's not taken away.
All right. Well, obviously, 15 years later, you proved them wrong. You guys are still on the air. How has the station's perspective changed towards the show, the music, and what are the challenges that you guys face today?
The station supports the show in an indirect way, which is, I mean, people who don't understand or may not know, Power Tools is the longest running underground show in the history of radio right now. There's been nothing like that yet. Thanks. And we've been very fortunate. We've had a good relationship with the different programmers that have come through the door at Power. I think we've had like four different programmers, and I don't know if there's a policy out there like just let them do their thing. I have no idea, but they let us do our thing, which is cool. They've cut us down from certain hours and moved things around, but for the essence, it's we've had a really good relationship, like Jimmy Steele, who's the program director right now. We have a really good relationship with him. And, they support us by not fucking with us, if that makes any sense. You know, we don't ask them. You don't have to advertise it. It don't matter. We know people are going to find the show. It's just, I know I've had friends who have had many shows at other stations where the program directors will get involved. Hey, don't play that type of house music. Why don't you bring this guest DJ? And they've never, ever once, like, suggested anything having to do with the music. And they were supportive when we took the show live to the Dome. We did a couple of live different broadcasts here and there. So that's why I think it's had its longevity.
And I think now the ratings are speaking for themselves. Power Tools now is the most listened to radio program of any radio station in LA in that time slot. So that's awesome.
Well, one thing. Thanks to you, late night people. But one time, I think it was about 4 years ago, there was a new program director. The program director, Jimmy Steele, I think the station manager, Val Mackey, and one of the main honchos who started at Power but has now moved up in the ladder up to corporate. What's your boy?
Rick
Cummings. They were all in town, and Richard was going to play for Reza over at the sports arena, and they wanted to come check out Richard. And Richard said, make sure they're taken care of. So, you know, we timed it out so that they got there right before Richard's set. I met them right at the VIP entrance. I walked them right in, and we came in through the back. And it's like you walk into the sports arena through the back, and you just see this ocean of people covering that floor, covering every seat in the sports arena. And they just announced Richard, and the place just lights up. And I go, do you guys want to go up there and see Richard do his thing? And they go, yeah. And so I took him up on the stage, and their mouths just literally dropped. You know, they later said, and the only promotion you guys did for this was on your show? And we go, yeah. They didn't buy commercials? No. This is all just underground. They don't understand what we do. They don't understand what is happening with this music. This is something they can't put a label on. This is something they can't market. This is something they can't sell because it's just so ugh. And so that's why they don't fuck with us.
Well, clearly Los Angeles radio has changed a lot during the show's lifespan. And obviously since the show started, the music has evolved also into a plethora of subgenres. How have you managed to always stay on top of all the new emerging sounds and present week after week a balanced mixture of different genres?
This is, Eagle has to answer this because for a while there, Eagle was playing a different sound every month. Yo, I'm into deep tribal. I'm going to start playing deep tribal.
Well, always trying to experiment, right? I don't know. We just try to look at like what trends are happening. Try to feel what kind of music is really happening out there in the underground clubs and what international DJs are playing. And we have the pleasure of having like world-class DJs on, and once you hear their mixes, it kind of helped you go in that direction. And I think that once the internet came on, it became more of a universal thing where a lot of people had access to music that only certain DJs would have access to before. And we found that many of us were playing similar styles of music. Now that we've had the internet for a couple of years, I think the sounds are again being refined. I'm into a sound that's a little different than David Lano or a little different than Richards. But at the moment, everybody's playing house music, and house music is really king right now.
And how about some of the younger DJs? How have you been influenced by, you know, the different, you know, the older, more experienced DJs, their sound, your DJ skills, how you go about making your mixes and presenting them on the show?
Well, for me personally, I have to say that exposure-wise and what influences me the most is what goes on around my neighborhood. So primarily Los Angeles. And then from that point, I compare what happens here to what's happening in the world via the internet. And usually, like Eagle was explaining, there seems to be this kind of homogenization of DJs, no matter what part of the world they are. It's like the internet has been able to connect everybody, so the sounds aren't that different, but the way the DJ delivers and how they play is what makes them different. So I think for the most part, that's where I get my, you know, inspiration or kind of, you know, where I look to for ideas.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, I listen to DJs' mixes on the website. I tell Richard all the time, when I first heard Laidback Luke's mix, doing tricks on the CDJs and then seeing the videos like on YouTube, like, wow. Dang, how do you do that? You know, and then just sitting there trying it. I remember me and Richard trying to figure out how he does tricks on his CDJs at the house. It's, you know, that's
kind of like hip-hop DJs had the DMC battles,
yeah, exactly.
You know, to look at. You know, now it's like electronic DJs have another outlet as well.
I think more than anything, the biggest influence would be going after someone like Richard. You know, being on the radio, having a staple like he does and stuff like that, and trying to outdo yourself every week. It's not easy to follow a jock like him. But to do it on the air every week the way we do it, and doing so much research, because everybody does research on music. It's not just get there and just throw it together. It really has to be, okay, we have to do something different. If techno's playing all over the world, let's put a little bit into it because people are getting into it. If it's electro, if it's something else, we all try to just kind of incorporate it together, and everybody does something different on their mixes. So it just really has to do with what's coming out, what someone's doing somewhere else, and just incorporate into your mix.
I pretty much book most of the DJs on the show, and my criteria has always been, if you're making noise, you got to come on Power Tools. If we hear about you, if you're in a club, if people are asking for you, you're more than welcome to come on Power. We're not a place to make a DJ. We're a place where we showcase DJs. And it helps that Swedish Eagle, when Swedish Eagle came on board, he opened that up to the global sense, because Eagle has so many wonderful connections. I mean, he's buddies with so many internationally recognized DJs that just added so much to our staple of DJs that we can go to. I mean, you know, we always have Deep Swing on. Tony Watson was a regular. The Wax Crew was a regular. You see different crews come up and down, and new heads pop in and pop out, and they have their time in the sun. And that's what we try to show, is what's hot in LA. Because first and foremost, we're an LA show, and that's been kind of like an issue that we've had with what do they call it? Syndication, you know, trying to be on other stations in other parts of the country. It's like, we're so LA, we can't do that in a way. It's like, we're about LA, we play LA DJs, we're about the LA sound, we're about what's happening in the LA streets, our references are all about Los Angeles, and we play the DJs that are making noise in Los Angeles. And yes, when we have, you know, a Laidback Luke, a Paul Oakenfold, a Dig Weed, or whoever come through town, we ask them where their favorite place to eat in LA is. So, you know, it's about what's hot here, and that's what keeps us going. I mean, I've had many friends tell us, oh, you should just play house, you should just play house, and we're like, bro, drum and bass is making a lot of noise right now. I got to have some drum and bass guys on. Trance, yeah, a lot of people talk shit about trance, but this guy's bringing 5,000 people, so I got to play something like that. You know, it's not what we want, it's what is out there that we try to do, and that's all we try to do.
Great, thanks. Now, you guys kind of briefly talked about the preparation that goes into putting together a show. Tell us a little bit about how you go about preparing an episode of Power Tools.
It's very simple. We get there. Jerry has nothing prepared.
like today.
Seriously. We normally, I mean, for those who don't know or do know, a lot of times we pre-record the show. A lot of times. We're supposed to meet at 7:30. I just want, let's be truthful here. I don't normally arrive 15 to 20 minutes late because I already know the process. I'm already 15 to 20 minutes late, and Jerry's still writing up notes. No, but the show really gets prepared by Jerry. Honestly, I don't even know who's playing on the show until we get there. So you tell us how you prepare.
It's just that. I call Eagle calls me, or I call Eagle at the beginning of the week. Who's coming to town? Who has a CD coming out? Who have we heard about? Who's been in our ear? And, you know, did we get a hold of them? Can we get them on? Are they going to be there? And that's it. You know, we just roll with it like that. And sometimes we have cancellations, and, you know, Robert's there with a backup, or back there. I saw DJ Outer in the crew. He's part of the crew, but he's been absent too much lately, so we didn't have him up here, but he's back there somewhere. We have a backup DJ, but it's just that. It's who's hot, again, just like I said.
Actually, you know, I see Power Tools as a platform for cutting-edge dance music. Since day one, you know, as you mentioned, the show has always focused about promoting the DJ, you know, and breaking new music, both local and international. Power Tools has been a springboard for many artists and DJs. Now, you guys created the Homegrown. Tell me a little bit about how that came about and how that still remains something for LA artists and a way of promoting new music.
I think in the late 90s, a lot of LA producers were starting to do their own tracks. And I was playing them, and we were playing them in the show. But it seemed like we wanted to be able to highlight that because it was like the first time that there was, I would say, an LA production movement. So we wanted to let everybody know, and we call it Homegrown, whether if you do a remix or it's an original song, or if you're a singer. We've had singers from LA that have sung on, you know, on somebody else's tracks. And it was a way to be able to showcase LA people producing LA house music or remixing LA house music.
Now, in case you guys haven't heard what Homegrown sounds like.
All right, right now, we do this thing called Homegrown, where we showcase new talent out of Los Angeles. Like last week, we had Artie, the one-man party, with the song. What's the name of the song, Artie, that you had?
It's A Mover La Colita.
Oh, my. And what does that mean in English?
It's a shaking ass.
Right.
Find out. That record was executive produced by Juanita.
All right, it's fine. So now we got my man, Juan V.
Homegrown.
It's the double one, almost like John John. One.
Fine. Hold on, let me tell this. What's the name of the segment?
It's Homegrown.
Oh, yeah, Homegrown.
It's changed a bit, huh? Well, great. Excuse me. Well, tell me, how have you guys managed to stay accessible to the local scene? And what is the criteria for determining what is worthy of for the show and what is not?
Well, I think that, I mean, there are so many good local producers right now. Like, you know, the equipment has made it easier for producers to produce, so there is just more of them, and it's easier for us to choose, and there's a plethora of great stuff, and we just love to put it on. And then there's people like Groove Junkies who have, you know, they started out and people didn't really know who they are. Now they're playing Ibiza. They're world famous DJs. And, of course, when they have something new out and they come and present it first on Power Tools, make it a world premiere there, that's very exciting. So we're sort of looking out for what which ones of the artists and producers that we've had on are doing really good and which ones are making noise right now.
Now, are there artists or DJs that you refuse to play? His lawyer's not here.
I don't think so. I don't think that, like, I think that we sometimes talk about if something is happening or whether it's not happening. And I think that there was always, like, a group of us, you know, four or five different guys. So we sort of just exchange ideas, just talk back and forth. And then somebody may know of somebody or haven't heard of somebody. And then it's just about exchanging ideas and get a little educated, and then we try to put them on. I don't think that we really, like, some, you know, sometimes we may say, well, you know, maybe they ought to step up a little bit, change the sound a little bit, come with something new that you can feel more, and then it'll be more appropriate to put them on.
Jerry has been picky. And then I get shit for it. And you know that's true. No, like Jerry says, and again, Jerry, as you know, we've put faith. I mean, he's done a great job producing the show for 16 years. So there'll be sometimes me and Jerry may argue about who should be on or who shouldn't be on. But at the end of the day, I mean, Jerry has the say. I mean, I can say whatever I want. He turns in the show. But I think, like Jerry, going back to what Jerry says, I don't think we ever say nobody's on the show, but we want to pick people who are making noise. So we may not dip back to certain DJs or something, but we like to look for somebody that's making noise, whether they've got a new record coming out, they've got a mixed CD, they're doing a ridiculous residency. I mean, one of the reasons why we brought Delano on the air on a regular basis is just he was just making noise. I just started hearing about it. I mean, I've known Delano for years, but it was like I'd be talking to some girl and she goes, oh yeah, I went to go hear Delano and set was good. And then I started hearing it from like a lot of different people, and then I went to Jared and I said, hey, I think it would be good if we brought somebody that was spinning in LA all the time as a regular DJ, because I was traveling a lot and we didn't really have a DJ that was consistently on Power Tools that was consistently playing in Los Angeles. So that's why we decided to bring on Delano. And again, it's just about if you're out there, if you're an up-and-coming DJ, there has to be like some type of noise. And if you've got a hot track, we'll play the hot track. Some DJs come through Homegrown. Some DJs come through the DJ contest. Some DJs come through as interns. I mean, we've had a million interns, and I've got to say, Robert's got to be one of the best interns we've ever had. I mean, Robert was such a great intern. I hired him to work with my company, and he works with me almost like, wow, practically full time some weeks, depending on what we got to do. Because you know, and again, we're always looking for somebody that's hungry, that has a desire, or is doing something that's, you know, really, really cool.
Okay. Well, you know, as DJs and as Power Tools, the show, you guys are the tastemakers for LA dance music. How do you recognize when something is just a passing trend or it's a legitimate new sound or genre?
How? That's a good question. It's a difficult question. It's somewhat tricky, but it really comes down to to knowing your history when it comes to this music, because everybody knows history works in cycles, and the reason why it works that way is because people in general don't care about history. So if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat yourself. And if you know how that cycle works, then you're able to maintain ahead of the curve, ahead of the next DJ. So in terms of styles of music that comes out, I mean, really, sonically, production has enhanced so much, but when you listen to it, the core of it is really a throwback of something that came out 5 years ago. Essentially, that's what it is. But if you know, what old school DJs or newcomers are popular at the time and the style that they're playing, and, you know, the crowds that they're drawing, the venues that they're playing at, all of that is relevant if you compare that to what happened 5, 6, 7 years ago. And the internet has made that easier, but in some cases more difficult, because there's so much influx of music that it's really hard to say what's good and what's not. And I believe that everybody here has a good ear for music. And really, that is essential too, is to know, is by listening to something like, this is dope, or like, that's just whack. We all have different tastes, but within our taste, we know what's good.
I think it's the magic of Power Tools, is the fact that there is this group of DJs that come together with different guests and different residents every week. And every week we talk about, so how was the week before? What have you been playing? Oh, I played that song. Oh, you played that song? That worked for you? And when you do that every week, you know, year in and year out, you kind of tend to know if somebody brings up a style, wants to promote that for a little bit, well, after a couple of weeks, maybe we're feeling it. After a couple of weeks, we are not. David Lano turned me on to the Crookers, for example, and that whole wonk sound that's out right now. Love him for that. And that has made me go further into that direction because I like it. Then I'll come back and challenge maybe Robert or Richard and say, hey, are you guys playing that? And that's how it evolved. So it's like by us hanging out and having guests coming in and talking about it every week, I kind of feel that's how we know.
And I just have to add, by far, Swedish Eagle is the most open-minded of all of us here. Because if we tell him this is hot, he's going to play it. And you know what? I have a lot of respect for him because he's been able to maintain this long, and he's still relevant today.
I think Richard touched on this earlier in terms of, you know, Swedish Eagle also having kind of exploring new genres that may not be, you know, the popular thing. So have you ever gotten it wrong? Have you become obsessed with a trend and it's been short-lived? And that goes for any of you.
Yeah, I think everybody has. And I think it's also more recently that there is more trends that come or stay shorter or longer times. Like back in the very beginning of Power Tools, there was house and techno. We weren't even breaking it down into breakbeat music or trance music. That all came on later. And I think that, you know, I don't really feel that we've really sort of stuck with a genre for too long that didn't work out. I mean, trance music has been a sore subject, but it's like Speed Garage, yeah, but you know, look now with Wonk and that kind of music that's out right now, that's taking Speed Garage to the new level.
I would say that the show might have suffered from a trend between 97 and 99.
Hard house.
Yeah, I think that, and you know what, but we were the leaders when it came to that sound, and ironic enough, you know, I think 2001, 2002, the LA hard house sound blew up in Europe, you know, but we abandoned it. We don't.
Hard house. Admit it, boys. Richard, Tony B, AJ, Michael Trant, Speedy K, all playing the same boom, boom. These guys would fight over the records, right? Oh, I'm going to play that. No, I'm going to play that, right? And we got a really bad rep for a minute. I mean, I was putting the show together still, but I was like, yo, you know, you guys, we got to play Taylor. We got to play Shorty, you know, play some deep house, you know. But these guys dominated, and we got a really big reputation for being a hard house show. And I'll say it to his face. Doc Martin, Marcus Wyatt refused to come on the show. They would be like, "Nah, that's a hard house show. I ain't going on there." I'm like, "Bro, if you give me a mix, I'll play it." And they're like, "Nah. I don't want to be associated with a hard house show." Suave knows what I'm talking about. Suave would step up sometimes with Shorty and play some deep house in the middle of the hard house. But hey, like we said,
and Suave is now the new school leader of hard house.
Yeah, the new school. But we were playing what was hot. We were playing what was hot.
Yeah, and I think a lot that had to do with it was that I think the bigger venues started opening their doors to all ages. And, you know, they ate it up. The kids ate it up. And, you know, what are you going to do? You can't play something they don't want to hear.
Right. Well, yeah, I remember those days. And I have plenty of mixtapes with a bunch of hard house back and forth, back and forth. Okay, well, tell me here. You know, we talked earlier about celebrating the DJ, always featuring many big names, whether it's local, international. But, you know, you always have the LA DJs forefront and center. I actually have an excerpt of when Swedish Eagle first visited Power Tools in 1992.
Now, our next special guest,
Yaman,
the Swedish Eagle, making his first time appearance here on Power Tools. What's happening?
Well, I'm happy to be here. Want to repay the favor and the visit that you did when you came to Mars FM with the Movement.
That's right.
Happy to be here. Congratulations on a great sounding show.
Now, what's happening, okay? Mars, tell us what happened with Mars, your point of view, because there's a lot of different stories floating in the air.
Well, I think that the general manager, Luz Erdman, made a decision to go with the adult contemporary format because that's what she knew how to sell. So she let the listeners down. Everybody.
So the rest is history. Obviously, Swedish Eagle eventually joined the show and has been a big part of it. Now, obviously, you've had a lot of DJs come visit the show over the years. Which have been some of your favorites and maybe least not so favorites, and why?
Oh, God, it's hard to say, God. Some memorable moments. We've had so many good moments up there. Having Doc Martin there recently, like when he decided to come back, was a very exciting time because he came and shared so much with us.
Very generous.
Yeah, and it was really, really cool. Having some of the bigger name DJs, having Paul Oakenfold come up there was very, very cool. And having stand in our little studio and you know, be with us on the air. Many of the interviews that we've had on have could have been done remotely, but to have people come into studio is always very special. I don't think that there has been anybody that we didn't like or didn't want to have up there. We've always had a good time with everybody. I think one of the funniest moments were when DJ Kiyoki came on, and he had like a keg of beer. He had like, I'm not kidding you, like this huge keg of Heineken beer.
The mini kegs.
Yeah, in between questions, he would like sip the beer.
One of the most pleasantly surprising guests that we had was Tommy Lee of Motley Crue. Swedish Eagle brought him up, and I was like, bro, why are you going to bring this guy? It's like, he's one of those celebrity guys that wants to be a DJ because it's cool, blah, blah, blah. You know, the Danny Mastersons, the, you know, Lindsay Lohans.
Peter Hook.
They all want to be DJs now. They put down their guitars and Eagles, well, you know, let's talk to him before. And actually, he doesn't DJ. He plays the drums, and this guy DJ Aero spins. And I'm like, all right, let's bring him in. Let's bring him in and see what he says. And we asked Tommy Lee. This is all off air. Like, we're kind of like grilling him, you know. We're all like kind of like surrounded him. And we're like, what's up, you know? Like, and he knew he was in foreign territory. And we go, when did you first get into DJing? And he told us this story. And I don't know if he's a great actor or if it was really, truly from his heart. But he said, back in 93 or 94, I was partying at the Ministry of Sound. And Josh Wink was playing. And he played Higher State of Consciousness. And I literally just fell on the floor and laid there through the whole track and practically had an orgasm. He goes, from then on, I've always been on top of electronic music to some degree or another. And we're like, okay, he knows Josh Wink. That's cool. But then he said, well, what do you do now with your music? How does your rock or your music background influence, you know, what you're doing with DJing? And he goes, oh, wow, you know, it's not just like Aero spins and I make noise on top of it. It's like we make sure Aero has certain records in a certain key, and I tune my drums to that key, and then we play together to, you know, create this, you know, dissonance or create new layers so that we're using the full spectrum of the speaker. And we all kind of just looked at each other and went, okay, he's in. Because, you know, only if you're a DJ do you understand like that talk about sound and feel and the importance of it, you know. So Tommy Lee was a pleasant surprise.
Any other favorites?
Two of my favorite guests, local RAW.
Yes, big time fan.
And Josh Wink. Yeah, those two. And Taylor Mix, I used to play a lot too.
Well, I think one of the things I used to love about R.A.W.'s mixes is he always used to throw in a little like message before his mixes. And sometimes they weren't politically correct, but you know they were always great mixes, great mixes. Obviously, moving on into the evolution of DJ culture and kind of where we're headed in the future, as DJs and DJing continues to evolve, it's important to look at some of the changes in the craft and look at the DJ of the future. In the last 16 years, there have been many changes in technology with DJ equipment. How have you guys had to adapt, and what do you use when you DJ now at a club?
For me, I think the biggest change came with the CD player. CD players have been around for a long time, but they were like the old kind of like a drawer, and you had a controller sitting around a mixer. When the Pioneer, the ones that are out right now, the Pioneer 1000s, the CDJ 1000s came out, that was really revolutionary for me. And I used to have a big problem for me was to try to find music at a record store. When you go into the record store to buy vinyl, there was like maybe two copies left, and you know they had, somebody else had like bought most of the other music. It was hard to find as much good music as you can find on the internet today. So to me, that has been the most important change, is be able to have all that music available to me, and now I spin it on CDs, and I love to spin on those CDJs.
Well, for me, I use Serato. I use it with turntables on CDJs. Boo. You know, but Serato sometimes saves your butt. Sometimes, for example, this weekend I was in Vegas. It was a different crowd. They weren't really feeling the house. So I had to change it up. If I had CDs, I probably wouldn't have brought that style of music that they wanted. And right there, I typed it in Serato, boom, done. And it pretty much saved my butt, you know. And because of that, got me another gig in Vegas, you know. So I use Serato, and I'll use CDJs with CDs too. But
I think when it comes down to it, the biggest thing is that technology-wise, now you get to carry a lot more music than just bringing a little crate with like maybe 50 records. Now you carry a CD case, and you got 20 hours of music. So then, like, you know, like Eagle was saying, we can swap music between all of us. If we can't find a track at a certain record store, which obviously maybe don't exist anymore, all we got to do is say, hey, email it to me or send it to me. And then plus it's so much cheaper so that anybody pretty much can be a DJ, which is good and bad. But at the same time, it's good because any layman can go out there, listen to a record, and if they like it, then they know we're going to play it. So we're not so much kind of out of the loop, but to break a record, it's kind of like now we really want to break a record. So I think technology, if it's on a computer or it's on CD, either way, we get to carry a lot more stuff, and we can, you know, just kind of go between different genres and stuff of not only if it's going to be just electro or anything else, but you can just kind of move it around a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'm sure a lot of people in the audience probably have a lot of questions that they want to ask. I just want to ask one more question.
Can I just add to this?
Sorry, brother. Go ahead.
Okay, on the other hand, out of all of these guys, I stay true to form. I play records. Now, Armand Van Helden had a song called Witch Doctor. And to me, that's what a DJ is. He's a witch doctor. I take pride in finding songs, records. I don't need 100 records or 100 songs or everything that's out there currently. I want to make sure that everything I play is personally handpicked and it's going to do something. I don't want the crowd to more or less dictate to me what I should play, but I want to play something that's going to be pushing buttons on the people on the dance floor. So that's where I come from.
Well said. All right, before we open up to discussion or for the audience, I just want to ask one question. What's in the future for Power Tools? Obviously, all good things have to come to an end. When will you know when it's time to say goodbye to Power Tools?
See, here's the way I look at it, is that we're continuously moving along. We've been progressing. It's an ongoing evolution for 16 years, and we're just right in the middle of it. We're going to continue to do the same thing to bring on these new and upcoming guys. The sounds will change. We'll be playing, for the next 16 years, we'll be playing many different sounds. But I think as long as we keep doing that, that's usually the problem with things getting old, is that people are not open-minded to the fact that there are new things and sounds coming in, and we are very much open-minded.
When one thing that keeps me going, and I had to put Eagle on the spot, is when somebody comes in with new music and they give it to Eagle, he's like that 15-year-old DJ that got a new piece of record. He's like, yeah, all right, cool, thank you. You know, it's like, I got free music. You know, and that's what I think a lot of us have that in us still. It's like when we get free music or we hear a new mix or a new mix style, we get excited about it. You know, and as long as we keep having that feeling, you know, of how we were when we first got into it, I don't think we ever need to stop, because there's always going to be another DJ playing another type of mix, a new sound, a new frequency, and we're going to feel it and we're going to be excited about it. Once we stop getting excited, well, then, yeah, pass it on to the next guy. But, you know, I think that's what feeds us, that excitement.
What we spoke about earlier, I also think, you know, goes along with this question, is that the show itself is, with open ears and open eyes, looking at our city, at what's happening. And if we were to devote more time into what was going on in another place of the world, then maybe the show would have been short-lived. But since we're about the city and, you know, we support each other, I think that's part of what our endurance, you know, has been as far as why the show has lasted as long as it has. And, no, I just, that's my perspective on it.
And I think L.A. is much better for these individuals up here at the panel. So please give them a round of applause. So I guess now we'll take some questions. And if you want, I'll stand off to the sides and you can come and ask the question.
Hi, my name is Greg. I'm from Orange County. Had the privilege of hearing the show from Swedish Eagle back in 1994. And I just want to know what are you hearing now, 2008, that you really like, that you really feel, whether you play it on air or off air? Thanks.
At the moment, for me, it's, you know, I'm not really sure what to call it. Some people are labeling it Fidget House or Wonk. Crookers, I think, is an outfit that really do that sound very well. And Destructo, a good friend of ours, a promoter, is putting on these hard dances. He did hard New Year's Eve, hard summer. He's going to do hard mansion or whatever it's going to be called for Halloween, and he's doing another New Year's Eve show. He's bringing out artists like Justice and Simeon Mobile Disco, but also Crookers and Boys Noise, and there was a lot of excitement in that music to me. It sort of combines a little bit of the harder sounds, but also a lot of funkiness. The songs are shorter. It combines rock and hip-hop into these songs. There's a lot of energy, and you can, you know, Richard puts a lot of effort into editing his songs together, so he has exclusive versions of what he plays. I tend to play like longer versions, and in trance or progressive house music, or even some of that minimal techno, songs can be up to 13 minutes long. But with his new Wong style, the songs are more like 4 minutes long, shorter times to mix in and out, and that makes for a lot of excitement in the music. So that's what I'm into right now.
Questions?
Well, I've been listening to this show, Power Tools, since I was 14, so 94. Just like him, all of my friends, like, we were nerds. We were mama's boys. We couldn't go out, so we'd record Power Tools, and on Monday we'd be like, look at what I got here. And so, you know, and Richard Humpty Vision, Tony B., all the old school heads like Jungle George, Michael Trans, Brian Matrix, everybody from the past, and even now, like I've seen Swedish Eagle at a couple shows lately, yay. But what's up, if I don't want to pull anybody out, but I'd like to focus on Richard Vision, please. What's it like going from playing clubs and then coming up on Power Tools and then being Grammy nominated, Grammy winner, working with Madonna, working now, being worldwide? Like, Power Tools, I don't want to say is like your whole career, like, but you've seen a lot of growth of your career throughout the Power Tools history. What's that like, looking back on those shows or even possibly listening to old recorded shows of yourself, like, and hearing yourself grow through that time? That's 16 years of worth of growth.
Yeah, Power Tools definitely, in my career, has played a big part in what I do. And the fact is, because of Power Tools, I was able to make connections in the music business. I was able to make... I had an outlet to make records and be able to put them out on different labels. So it definitely plays a part in what I do. And it got to a point, and Jerry will know this, and this is one of the reasons why we brought Ego on board. It's because I knew in my career we needed somebody that was going to be a little more in tune to what was going on in LA, because I was going to be traveling. You know, a lot of times I tell people that, you know, Eagle's the host of the show. I mean, Jerry knows I'm there half of the time. Only because there's others, not that I don't want to be there, I always still do my mixes, but it's only because I have other commitments of stuff that I have to do in the studio. I mean, for people that don't know, I do a plethora of stuff on the pop-in stuff. I have a rock band, remixes. I mean, like, you know, and I do stuff for pop artists that people don't even know because I don't even put my name on it. But in the whole spectrum of things, it still comes back to whatever I do. It still comes back to my DJ roots, my house roots, and that still reflects, you know, on doing Power Tools. I mean, to be mixing consistently for 16 years, you know, on a weekly basis, you know, sometimes you'll run through a lull like, God, we have to do this again, or, you know, because you've just been doing it, but then all of a sudden, I'll get a batch of new music, and I'm just like, kind of like Ego, like, oh my God, I can hardly wait to play this. And a lot of times, it's great. My favorite time is when I'm not out of town on a Saturday, and I get to experience the show as a listener. That's awesome to me. Because a lot of times, I just do mixes, and I'm out of town, so I don't really hear it or get the feedback except from like emails when people are asking me what song, this song. But to experience the show as a listener also keeps me going in the perspective of things. But I've had an amazing, you know, career that I've been very happy with and been very lucky and fortunate at the same time to still be able to do what I love to do. And it's been a crazy, you know, it's been a crazy, like, journey from, you know, some people don't know about this, but, like, I DJed, like, 4 or 5 years ago, I DJed Madonna's birthday party at her house for her and 64 of her close friends. And all they wanted me to do was play house music. And I'm just like, this is odd because there's no camera people, there's no music people, it's just her and her friends. And at one point, they're all doing the electric slide. And I'm just like, this is fucking odd. But it's also a reflection. I know Power Tools is where my journey began. And it started from there. And that's why I continue to do it, because, you know, I respect the show. I respect all these guys up here. That's why we're always looking for different people to bring up, because at some point, I mean, you know, we're not going to do it forever, ever, ever. Forever, ever? No. Yeah. So, but yeah, I hope I answered your question. Maybe I didn't.
I've seen Jake DeVere do the electric slide to house music. I actually thought it was pretty odd when I saw him do it.
I actually got a comment. You know, actually, I have to thank you guys because Power Tools has been my DJ school. You know, I was growing up in Anaheim, not knowing anything about DJing or, you know, exposure to Hollywood clubs. And I think I learned how to mix by listening to mixtape after mixtape and mixtape. So thanks for all you guys for playing all the great music.
My name's Alex. Just going by what you just said, you come a long way from playing the backyards, I guess. What I'm going to get at is your beginnings. I mean, you weren't at Madonna's house all the time. We'd like to know yourself and all you guys in the panels, where you guys started? Where did you pick up your first set of headphones? Your first record, you know, mess with the first mixer?
I guess we'll go in order. I'll start. I started buying records before I had equipment. The first record I bought was at a swap meet. It was the Azusa swap meet. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that area. Yeah. All right. Word up. La Puente in the house right here. And a friend and I decided, hey, you know, we are into this music. We both started buying records. You know, it was kind of pricey at that time because we were both like 12, 13. So we went half and half on turntables. My brother at that time was bartending at Fantasia. And if you remember the Northridge earthquake, they had to remodel the Northridge Fantasia. So when they did that, they also replaced the system. And my brother brought home the mixer they had there at the club. And so those were my beginnings.
My beginnings were listening to Power Tools on the radio. And I was like, wow, what's that sound? It's cool. And then the next day, Richard Hump Division is going to be at Whittier Skateland with E-Man. And the big-ass bus is going to be there and the Baker Boys. And my dad dropped me off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I was 8th grade, going in, becoming a freshman. And then I saw Richard DJ, and I was like, dude, I got to do that. And then freshman year high school, I made friends with a couple people. They were B-boys. They invited me over to their house. They're like, hey, dude, go play that record. I didn't know how to play the record. So there were B-boys and DJs. So I remember the first song, Egyptian Lover. And then Soul Sonic Force, African Bambaataa. And then I would just play that sound. I didn't know how to mix. It was a train wreck at first, you know. Sometimes it still is. But, you know, then I just went to go see Richard at all the free parties and other DJs. Then when I started getting better at it, I lived in La Habra. So I'd go over the Hacienda Boulevard, go to La Puente, all the El Monte, all the backyard parties back in high school. And I would just see all the other DJs do it. And that's how I learned.
Well, I guess I started just like Jerry, East Los. We started doing all the parties like on Hubbard and all those parties over there. Then after that, we went into the school dances, you know, being in high school, DJing, doing all that stuff, went to do the Bosco Techs, all that, you know, private school type deal. So we got into, you know, doing all the school dances first. Then after that, it kind of just went into like doing Florentine Gardens here and there, doing all these other things. And just the whole Latin underground rave scene started. Everybody started cracking into that. You know, they started doing like little guest spots here and there. And it just kind of escalated from there. And we got the boys from Brazil, you know, Danny Poison. One of the guys I used to DJ flawlessly, I used to remember how he was. He used to just kind of get this chamois looking thing and clean his record every time he played it. We would get ours and just fingerprints all over the place. We just didn't care. We just tossed him. And I used to see Richard do the same thing, just toss him and toss him. And we didn't care. But Danny was just like, nope, has to be perfect. Put the record on as kindly as you can and just kind of let it go. And after that, you know, he was a big influence with me. Obviously, Richard was too. Got into all that stuff. Then, you know, the 21 and over scene came. And just little by little, just kind of progressed and progressed. But I started in the backyard scene just like everybody else did or whoever did. But in East LA, baby.
I started out as a DJ in my home country of Sweden and then came to America in 1976, and I came here. I decided it was so exciting, I wanted to stay. Started out working with a mobile disc jockey company back then called Let's Go Disco, and pretty much after I got here, I really got involved in the scene, started to work at a place called Nick's Fish Market. That's Blowfish Sushi on Sunset Boulevard today, and pretty soon after that, Universal City, Universal Station. Universal Amphitheater was an open amphitheater at the time, and this was like in 1978, and they had a big disco up there, and Donna Summer would come and perform, and the Village People would come and perform, and Casablanca Records would have parties at that club, and I would play. Yeah, I was DJing at the time. And so that's where I started DJing here in L.A., and then in 1981 or 82, started working at K-Rock.
God, where do I go back? What really got me into DJing, I started DJing in high school. There was a million DJs in my school, so if people understand the movement, just in my school alone, there must have been 20 crews. I mean, everybody was a DJ or you're a girl promoter. But when I started taking DJing seriously was, and I'll never forget this, and this kind of just took things off for me. Nobody could afford turntables, so one of my boys had turntables in his basement, and we would always go practice. And I remember practicing one time, and there was another DJ who knew how to mix, and we didn't really know how to mix, and he came in, and he goes, "Man, you suck. Get off." I'm just like, "Yo, we had our time set." Like, I was like 3 to 3:30 for my practice. He's like, "You suck. You can't mix. Get out of here. Let me practice." And honestly, that really pissed me off. I then took my mowing money from mowing lawns, and I rented my friend's turntables and put them in my garage without my mom knowing, and I practiced for about 6 or 7 hours a day for about 2 months, because my whole goal was I needed to be better than this DJ. And I remember the first time I then had a chance to play with him, and he still had this idea that I sucked. And then all of a sudden, I'd done some things that you know, I started mixing quicker. I was timing out my mixes. I'd really, just within those 6 months, really found, I guess, kind of like my philosophy of mixing. And once I played at that one house party, and it was a house party where the crew brought, I kid you not, to a house, 50 speakers. A wall, 50 speakers at a house. And then from there, I started up a crew. We started doing a whole bunch of house parties. I remember, and then Jerry was in another, I lived in Highland Park. Jerry was in Lincoln Heights. And he was like, him and his crew were like the biggest people in Lincoln Heights. And me and my crew were like the biggest crew in Highland Park. And then we would get together and do parties together. And that's how we kind of met from back in the day. And I just kind of grew from there, from doing house parties. Then had a chance to, God, I can't remember the first club I played at. I think it was like Maryland's. We were trying to do that on a Wednesday night back in the day. And then from there, my biggest, I guess, when things really kicked in for me, I was playing at a bunch of different clubs, and I was a little frustrated, and I hear DJs talk about this all the time today, because a lot of the promoters don't respect the DJs, and you're waiting at the end of the night, waiting to get your money, they don't got your money, they tell you when you go on, and I got really frustrated. I remember it was Tony B, I'm like, and I remember the club was Caddy's. I'm like, "Yo, I'm done with doing this stuff." And I said, "I'm tired of playing for other DJs and other promoters. The sound system always sucked." And I was getting real frustrated. I said, "You know, let's do our own club." And I went and met with Kenny from Florentine Gardens, and we started the Dome. And then, Oh, yeah, we did. That's right. That's right. Before that, we had done Jumbo's Playhouse. I forgot about that, at Pepper's. And then we did the Dome, and then I really was happy with doing that, but I wanted a 21 and over club, and then we started Diva. So, and I was very happy with those two clubs because it was, I got to play the music what I wanted, and I didn't, you know, we weren't really making any money, but I was just happy that I was playing in the right atmosphere that I wanted to play. And I've talked to Delano about this too. I said, you know, I've told him too. Eventually, you want your own night where you're there every week. You know the sound system. That becomes your home. The Dome was my home. I stepped up. I knew the sound system. I knew the crowd. The crowd knew me. So, and then it was great. And that's when I really learned how to program and take people on the journey, because, you know, those 1,500 people that came every Saturday night, they trusted what I was going to do. They weren't like, it wasn't like playing and they're going to fucking walk off the dance floor. They were there because of what I was, and vice versa, I was feeding off their energy. And, you know, that really, and from there got me, because I had a huge residency that we started bringing in DJs like Little Louis Vega, Armand. I mean, we're bringing everybody in through there. And that's how I was able to branch out of L.A. to start traveling.
Excuse me. Before, one thing, when he brought up Peppers, the first DJ I ever saw kind of showcasing himself was Richard. And that's what kind of the next thing you wanted to do is kind of, I want to be that. Because all the DJs that are here know, when you go into a club, you either they stick you in this little DJ booth in the back corner, or where you can't see you, or let's say in this little window, like at who knows how many clubs there is. And one time I walked into Peppers, and they were doing Jumbo's Playhouse, and he put it on stage. I walked in, and I go, I want to do that. Because everybody was just so used to just being behind a booth. You know, just not anybody, no one knew who was playing the music. It's like, whoever was playing it was cool, but no one knew exactly who the jock was. And that time when I walked in and they were doing Jumbo's Playhouse and Richard had it on stage, I'm all like, that's going to be the next level stuff. And that's what kind of inspired me to be, that's what we want to do.
East LA. My boy from Cathedral got me to start a DJ. I was at Lincoln. We hooked up with homeboys from Wilson. We started doing parties. My first big gig was with Chams and DJing for Paradise, Danny Alvarez. I used to look up to Danny Poison. Danny Poison always rocked a mean set. I remember him playing Se Me Paró, a slow Johnny Chinga song one time at Camiso at the Casa. And then halfway through, he cuts into Feel It. I mean, just like out there, and the people were just on him. And I go, that's what we got to do. That's the kind of vibe and trust we got to get. Met Richard in the house parties. The underground started. You know, I partied with Adrian over at the Sexpress. Everybody remembers Sexpress on 7th, the first acid house club in East LA, with Tito and the Tarantula and Johnny Vatos and the other guy from Oingo Boingo playing in the bar area, and just clubbing around, man, and doing gigs wherever I could. I teamed up again with Danny from Paradise and my boy Alex Campos, and we did a club in Beverly called Euphoria. We totally had all these fake permits made out, and we would deck it out every Saturday night with, like, bones hanging in the sky. We were all about, like, the presentation of, like, this day glow acid trip, you know, thing. And we ran that sucker into the ground for 6 months. We had a speakeasy room, like, you know, if you said something, you could get in there, and we'd play weird stuff in there, and you could drink. And then in the main room, Richard would come in after he finished his set at Maryland's. And eventually the cops and the fire marshal started talking and realizing that those permits were fake, and we had to disappear. And, you know, from that, Richard hit me up for Jumbo's.
You had to disappear because you're selling alcohol to minors.
Like I said, underground. And then the East LA. Ended up at Jumbo's Playhouse, man, and that was something that we just never expected. I mean, it was way the hell out in the butt end of the East Side. And by the end of our run, we had one line going that way and one line going that way and a front of the line pass that meant nothing. And we thought we were so bold that we moved to the brand new Shark Club, which was over here at Grand Avenue. And nobody followed us because back then people from the East Side were afraid of crossing the river. Until they started following Delano over and Raul Martinez. But overall, I mean, this is all something that we didn't do individually. We're all part of this, you know, this massive movement that every one of you in here has a slice of, you know, be it just paying your money at the door, sneaking in, whatever you did, or being a promoter, being a DJ. None of this would happen without all of us, you know, and that's the spirit of this show that we have going on here. Again, we're open to everybody's stories, flyers, lights, sounds, mixes, presents. We're going to bust out the cake right now to celebrate our 16th birthday. But again, we couldn't be here without your support, without your continuous pushing of the music as well, without you pushing us, and as well as the godfathers, the forefathers, the people before us, like Ultimate Crave that's back there, you know, who one of the largest sound systems in the city. And you know, where's Danny? Danny keeps disappearing. He's outside on the telephone. Okay, well, last time we had a special guest appearance by Cesar De Niro, and I think we're gonna. Any more questions? I think we gotta wrap it up because it's getting tired. Well, come on up.
I guess I kind of just want to. I got a question, and I kind of want to share a little story with you. Growing up in LA, and this is more for like for old school DJs. You know, growing up in LA, you know, I did a lot of graffiti art, you know, and I kind of think it's safe to say that a lot of even DJing probably rooted out of New York City, you know, back east. I know graffiti did, and I can't tell you how it traveled to LA, but when we did it right, we did it good. And recently, you know, I just hit the Bronx. And with some old school cats from the 70s, old subway riders, and they were like, you know what, LA, you guys know what you're doing. How do you think the DJing must have traveled here to LA? Because obviously, you guys are doing that part, right? And what do you think must have happened there?
It's in my book. DJing start was everywhere. Okay, and the way it got to East LA in particularly was Chicanos like Ultimate Crave, like Tony Largo, aka back then Tony Escamillas, Steve Beltran, Face to Face, John Guzman, other heads going to gay clubs like Gino's and the Third World. Third World was actually in El Sereno. Carlos Mongalo used to play over here in some Beverly Hills clubs. And so DJing was everywhere. It wasn't like it got shipped over from New York. Everybody, you know, who kept disco alive was the gay clubs. But as Latinos, you know, either we're going to have a mariachi and somebody's going to play the discos. Eventually somebody decided to put two components together and go between the two. Once we went to a couple of clubs and saw that you could buy a mixer to put between these turntables, then it became what it is. But you know, we're always about the music. We're always about the mix. You can't just have a mariachi and not play some Brenton Wood and, you know, some Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know. That's we're just made to mix because that's who we are, you know. We have everything in us.
Jerry, where can they get your book?
I have a couple of copies, but it's available on lulu.com, lulu.com. Just... Yeah, G727 and scroll down. Yeah, and please check out the KCET backyard thing that we have on kcet.org. I don't know if you've checked that out. That's just one side thing that has grown from this project. Again, I'm inviting everybody always. Please, thank you for coming. We're going to have some cake and ice cream. Bring your flyers. Yeah, leave some comments on there because it... Yeah, we have a lot of hits. A lot of people are visiting, but they're not saying anything. Okay, so if you go, please say something. This is cool. This is dope. I hate the mix. We got an email today from Peter Black, our homeboy, is checking my mix. But it's something that's just one little thing that we had grow out of this. The book is the first thing. The KCET thing's another thing. We've been on KPCC.
We're going to be on KPFK, I believe, this week or next. We're going to have a panel, not next week, but on the 10th. And that one's put together by our homeboy, Eddie Zaint. See, Eddie Zaint just came to a panel just like you did. And he said, hey, I could get some homeboys together and talk about a part of the scene. And he's putting together a segment called Housegate, dealing with Southgate, because Southgate was a very influential area of music in the early 90s. He's going to have Reza, he's going to have Herrick Hall, Alex I, Dr. Cisco. I think we're only missing R.A.W., but Alex Tercero is going to be on there. So, you know, the Southgate area really has shaped L.A. as well, and he put that together. If you guys have any ideas for future panels, hit us up. You know, we'll help you through it. But this is your show. It's not our show. It's not their show. It's everybody's show. Okay? So, anything else? Any more questions? One more question. Okay, come on.
Hey, guys. I'll try to keep it short. Not your guys' fault, but around 94, 95, I stopped listening to Power 106. Didn't actually know until today when I got an email from a friend that the only name I recognized was Richards, but without the Humpty. And that's pretty much like one of the draws that brought me here. And I know you said earlier about how obviously you're not going to be doing it forever, but since I haven't listened to Power or anything, just what kind of ideas do you have about how long you might be on the show or how long the show might be on for? It's like,
In radio, you never know. If you had asked me 16 years ago if we'd be doing this show for 16 years, I'd probably tell you you're on crack. Because radio shows just don't last that long. If it ends 2 weeks from now, then it's been an amazing run. And I've been, you know, more than happy, and I'm cool. If it ends 10 years from now, I'm still cool with it. We'll keep on doing it. I think there's enough passion for the music. So I think it will keep on rolling, whether the station, you know, the station could get sold in 2 weeks. You know, then if that's the case, we'll maybe take it online or whatever happens. But I think the show is in really, really good hands. You know, that we have people that I can say are the future of the show because we've brought in young talent. So I think the show will be around in one form or another for a good while, definitely.
You guys ready for cake? Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, for
coming.
Thank
you for coming. We love you.
Appreciate
it. Thank you for listening.
Say it.